welcome to the Fast OC podcast. My name's Ian Wright, firearms instructor with Fast OC, holster maker with Overwatch Holsters, and generally known as that English bloke over there. I'm here with Lance Boland, our chief firearms instructor and a man with a beard. How you doing, Lance?
Good. I'm just sitting here stroking my beard.
It's coming on really well, man.
It is. It started off pretty mangy, but you know, with this whole tactical beard rage, you know, this beard rage, you know, you gotta get on board with it. I actually, you know, most of the staff, except for those that are active duty, has remarkably started to grow their zen quite well. I'm impressed. I've got this. Unfortunately, I've got the curse of the Irish with the beard thing. I just can't get the cheeks to grow in right, but hopefully we can get that taken care of. Get a beard implant or something, you know?
The thing is, mine actually came about by accident. I was so busy for a 2 or 3 week period, I forgot to shave. And one day I realized I had a beard, and a few days later I found myself doing single-handed reloads and all this really cool shit, and I thought, this is a tactical beard.
There you go. I believe it's rated by the caliber of bullet you can hold in it. That's my understanding. So yeah, I'm up to about a 308 right now. Give it a couple months, we may be up into the 338 Lapuas and Lapua Magnum. So we'll see.
I've got a 9mm here, and yeah.
I don't think it counts for pistol cartridges. I think it has to be a rifle cartridge.
Is it really?
Yeah,
I could probably do a 22.
Yeah, maybe we'll start that on the Facebook page. You know, let's see. They have a little competition of where you're at and what caliber you can hold. I know we got some of our followers out there. You can probably put a 25mm in there and hold it.
Jeez.
It doesn't count if you tie it, though. It's got to just simply be inserted and held in place by the beard itself. No tying.
It wouldn't even have occurred to me to tie it. Mind you, I'm a little way off of that at the moment. Anyway, what have you been up to?
Well, we've been doing quite a bit. We've just moved locations. We left the Anaheim location, and simply because we've outgrown it. For those of our students who were in that location, it was a conference room. We had the 70-inch screen up on the wall, and we could pack it in there, and we could hold. I think it was about six comfortably. I know we've had some eager individuals show up without announcing their presence online or otherwise, and we've made 12. I think was my largest class in that one, and now we're in a location that looks like, I guess if, with proper arranging, we can stuff 20 or 30 people in our new location, as well as the second classroom we have on the other side, which will hold probably a good another 15 or 20. So that
and
we
the bar,
yeah, and then there's the bar. Yeah, we have of all places, I believe we're the first firearms organization to actually have a bar in our classroom. So that should be interesting.
Yeah, the strict no ammunition policy is in place there. We should make that clear.
Yeah, no ammunition. I don't remember seeing anywhere in the rules no alcohol, but we do keep that out of the mix, and that's an after effect, you know.
That's pretty cool.
It is.
Yeah, I'm excited for this.
Oh yeah, it is. And with some of the other staff members, we've been growing the Fast OC Tactical brand as well, and looking forward to kind of carving the two organizations. Putting a thicker line in between them of what we teach on each side, and obviously the family friendly, the husband and wife, and that kind of demographic on the very
civilian side of it.
Absolutely, and that's what we want to that's who we want to cater to with Fast OC. And with Fast OC Tactical, it's more of the homegrown brands. I want to make that distinction. Obviously, we have our tactical medical classes in there. We have our intermediate handgun, advanced handgun. We have the AR-15 courses that are in there, and you know, really looking to break those off. Plus, some of our other upcoming ventures that we look forward to that will all be under that banner. And looking forward to
some. I'm looking forward to some, not so much.
Yeah. There's we've got a couple events coming up that.
That I'm probably going to end up being cannon fodder for, let's face it.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, as the one who's never never had to hump a pack or you know, be under the gun or out on the wire before. That we have some classes that are gonna really gonna challenge people, and that's what we want. We're looking for something that will engage the students in more team building, problem solving, and ultimately employing the lessons they've just learned. And it may have been a lesson that they have learned in the hour previous that they're going to have to utilize, or aspects of the course that they're going to have to utilize.
Should be a lot of fun.
It will.
A lot of fun.
It will.
A lot of work, but a lot of fun.
Yeah. Watch this space, because they're coming up, and they're coming up soon. I believe our first announcement is going to be during our the show that we're doing out at Raw Hoggies and the Sportsman Fair. And I believe we're going to announce it there and see what kind of publicity we get.
So let's move on into a little section of the show where we're gonna pull a few things out of the news and see what we make of them. The first one, which this is pretty bizarre. The headline reads, this is over at bearingarms.com, by the way. I'm going to put a mention to that, and I'll put a link in the show notes to any stories we talk about here. Minnesota double murder trial shows importance of shooting to stop the threat over shooting to kill. Byron Smith, a retired security engineer for the U.S. Department of State, is charged with first-degree premeditated murder in the slayings of cousins Nick Brady, 17. And, oh God, I've done that thing where you come up on a name and I have no idea how to pronounce that. And someone else who was 16 on Thanksgiving Day 2012. Prosecutors say that Smith was sitting in his basement when he heard a window breaking upstairs. When Brady started walking down the basement stairs, Smith shot him twice. Then, according to court documents, Smith shot Brady a third time in the face, allegedly telling investigators, "I want him dead." Then, according to court documents, Smith shot Brady a third time in the face, allegedly telling investigators, "I want him dead." Minutes later, the other guy, Kiefer, I'm going to go with Kiefer, walked down the same steps, reportedly calling Brady's name. Smith shot her multiple times too, telling investigators the last time he fired was a good, clean finishing shot. Steve Meshbesha. Man, I'm getting called by names here, aren't I? Right.
Yeah, you pick quite the article.
Yeah, lesson learned. That Smith's attorney said the case focuses on home security, that Smith had been worried after several break-ins. This was about anxiety and fear and what somebody does in their own home, Meshbesha says. But prosecutors say Smith planned the killings, laying in wait for the two teens in his basement with a book, two guns, energy bars, and a bottle of water. The teens weren't armed. Now, I pulled this out, and I admit I did only glance over it before I brought it to us. But, I mean, it really does seem like this guy's trying to plead self-defense.
It does. It does. I mean, obviously, the prosecutors have seen fit to get him with first-degree premeditated. And if we kind of peel the onion back on that that charge, it means that he was laying in wait, that he had intended to commit a murder. I'm looking at the article now, I believe he's being charged, both of them, he's being charged twice with that for both shootings. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. So, they're unarmed. Okay, well, you know what? First things first, they entered the residence. So, there's a home invasion already. The shooting, the initial shooting, it's hard to say. What did he fear for his life? All of the information in this article says that he did not. I mean, he's got bottles of water. He's got, you know, energy bars. He's there with a loaded firearm and laid in wait, did not attempt to, no verbalization, you know, leave, I'm calling the police, I'm armed, leave or you'll be shot. So none of the recommended prerequisites have taken place. Obviously, neither of us being in this situation next to him, you know, we can't speak for the details. But to his own admission, after the third shot in the face, And the "I want him dead" is pretty much copping to murder. There's no way to get around that. You've sealed your own fate, which is, yep, you know, foolish. I mean, that's why we have attorneys, you know, to keep us from doing or saying, you know, really ridiculous stuff in the face of law enforcement. The more interesting note is that apparently the female, after hearing what I'm guessing is three gunshots, decided to investigate. She came down the stairs as well, in which he said the last time he fired was a good, clean finishing shot. Apparently, Smith had fired multiple shots into her as well. And, you know, this is something in the personal, this would be covered in our personal protection inside the home course, where we discuss topics such as this. And this will really be an article that I'll probably highlight in our next class. And it's your assailant, or, you know, your adversary has to have an ability, an opportunity, and the intent to harm you before you employ potentially or lethal force. You know, some 17-year-old kid walking down your basement stairs, he may have the ability, he may have the opportunity, but it's the intent. But yeah, that is not advisable. It's not. It's one thing to have somebody break into your house. It turns into a confrontation that, you know, leads to the application of lethal force. But yeah, sitting there laying in wait on somebody, with a coup de grace, apparently on both of them, is a quick way to the inside of gray bars for sure.
Yeah, that is really bad news.
Yes, it is.
Kind of the reason I wanted to pull this one up as well is, I know there's been a lot of misunderstanding, I think, particularly since the whole Trayvon Martin case, of what things like the Stand Your Ground Law and Castle Doctrine, mm-hmm, what they actually mean. I mean, you're getting crazy public perception, like they're grounds for murder. Like they allow, right, you to kill someone. And, I mean, forget the fact even that, oh, what's his name? George Zimmerman. Didn't even bring that defense, or try and use the defense of the Stand Your Ground Law in Florida.
Right.
I mean, it was classed as a self-defense shooting. No matter what you might think of it, the jury has decided. But that wasn't even a thing. And Castle Doctrine, I think, also gets misunderstood. You hear stories like, if someone comes in my house, I'm going to shoot them. Yeah, not quite that simple.
No, and it's not. It's, you know, in the obviously local and state laws are applicable to any type of defensive shooting. And that's one of the things that I highly recommend to our listeners is find out, what is that law? You know, mm-hmm, what am I, when can I and when can I not? And again, I'll pitch the personal protection inside the home course, in which one of the chapters is actually taught, is required to be taught by either a law enforcement officer, which is has a intermediate post certification that qualifies them to teach this aspect of the law, or an attorney that is familiar with laws, firearm laws, self-defense laws. Personally, I use Jason Davis out of Mission Viejo at Jason Davis and Associates. You know, he is a very well-respected attorney in this area. He's also been a solid advocate and a champion of Second Amendment rights and defense rights in the state of California and in this area specifically. So, it you know, if there's questions, call an attorney. You know, call a firearms attorney. You know, one that is listed. If there's any question of a doubt, you can always contact the NRA. You can always contact Second Call and find out their list of attorneys that they recommend, which is a service provided by Lockton through the NRA. And you know, and this is before it happens. You know. Get that information. Understand that before you end up in that situation, because once the lead starts flying, it's too late. you know.
Yeah. I don't think advocating that, you know, people put an attorney on retainer or anything like that is particularly necessary, but having that guy that you can call is.
Yes, absolutely. No, it is. It is. It's important to have something like that. And the NRA came up with I don't know if you want to call it a partnership or a program in conjunction with Lochtan. That's anybody that's an NRA instructor is extremely familiar with them as an insurance organization or as an surety organization. And they offer a program. It's actually considered a membership. It's not insurance, called Second Call. And it's I'm not going to go into the details of the program. You can find that out. And then that may be one thing. If we get enough interest, we can pull in a representative from Second Call. We can have a talk about that. But it's essentially the Second Call. Obviously, the first call being to law enforcement, second call being to them. And it's I don't want to call it a prepaid legal service, but it is a membership that gives you access and coverage in the case of a defensive shooting. And it's always smart, you know, as the staff of Fast OC has made decisions that, you know, we carry to protect ourselves, that we have firearms within our homes to defend ourselves and our families, that's a responsibility that we've taken. And with that responsibility, you know, comes the backing, because anybody that's been involved or has looked at a defensive shooting knows that it's absolutely devastating to your life, you know, emotionally, financially, and you know, it's obviously it changes your world and how you're viewed within that world. I mean, let's look at you know, right or wrong, and we won't get into that, but let's look at George Zimmerman. You know, what did that cost him? That cost him his livelihood. It essentially destroyed his life. And,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And you look at where he's ended up as well. I mean, that being such a high profile case. I mean, whether he was a little out to lunch beforehand or not, he's, you know, people seem to be surprised that he's doing crazy stuff. And it's, well, look what he's been through.
Yes.
You know,
yes. And there's others, and there's individuals that I've had the benefit of speaking to that have been involved in defensive shootings, and some of them have fared okay, and some of them has absolutely destroyed their life. You know, they've been alienated by their friends, they've suffered through all the symptoms of PTSD, and it's just never the same. You know, it's. You know, a lot of time, you know, people who conceal carry or people who keep a firearm for defensive use are always viewed as somebody who wants to go out and kill somebody. You know, unfortunately, the article we just talked about, you know, this guy's playing that role, you know. It makes us all look bad. And the fact is, you know, in a perfect world, you know, it would never be required. You know, like the worst thing that you'd ever hear is a harsh word, you know.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, in a perfect world, I wouldn't have a fire extinguisher sitting behind me.
Exactly, and I wouldn't need car insurance, and I wouldn't need health insurance. And, you know, it's one more level of protection. Unfortunately, you know, it doesn't result in that perfect scenario where, you know, if I have to resolve an issue like that, you know, I've made the decision to change not only my life, but, you know, the life of the person on the other side of that, you know, as short as that may end up being. So, you know, it's really something that people need to investigate and look at. And that's something we'll talk about in a later episode is, you know, what actually happens, you know, what happens in a defensive encounter. And, yeah, we can get more into that.
We're going to have a quick word from our sponsor, and we're going to go into our main topic, which is how do I get my other half into shooting?
This episode of the Fast OC podcast is brought to you by Overwatch Holsters, Kydex holsters handcrafted with love.
Okay, welcome back. We're going to meld two topics in together here. The first one being, how do I get my other half into shooting? And we're going to follow that up with buying or helping someone purchase their first handgun. So yeah, when I first put this down to PayPal or get my other half into shooting. I was thinking quite narrowly. I mean, we can bring that out to mean relatives, kids, neighbours, anyone like that. So Lance, how do you get someone into shooting?
Well, you know, if you have somebody with a genuine interest, you know, they're going to expose it. As soon as they find out that, you know, you're into shooting or that you're an advocate or you're an instructor, especially as an instructor, that they're going to want to get involved as well. And it may be as simple as setting up range time, you know, picking a time and a date and taking them out. The ones that we see or the phone calls that I get, whether it's a husband or wife, and it's split right down the middle, that I'll get phone calls from wives that want to get their husbands involved, or I'll get a phone call from a husband that wants to get a wife involved. And you've even been present for a class that that we had somebody come in and they were trying to get the I believe at the time it was his girlfriend into the shooting sports. And it may be as simple as taking a class, but one of the things that I've always expressed concern or that I've seen is the quote unquote boyfriend instructor. And I think if once we get into that segment of what can ultimately be detrimental to the experience is it lays along those lines. But it can be something simple. I mean, obviously, if you have a husband that is getting, well, hopefully is already into the sport, or a wife that is already into the sport that's bringing the other half, it's a discussion. You know, hey, let's go shooting. And then you're on your way. You know, same thing for you know, relatives or neighbors. There is a little bit different approach for youth, and not everybody is prepared to handle the younger kids. And one of the things that parents need to evaluate is not necessarily physical stature, because I've taught younger kids. I think the youngest one I've had so far is 6 years old. That we were teaching a shotgun course, and he was part of the Boy Scouts and had come out and broke clays, and it was awesome. And we were shooting a little 410, and him and I actually ended up on the cover of a newsletter for SoCal Top Guns, ran by Jim Porter out at Raw Hoggies. And he was thrilled, you know. And you know, it was enough for him to handle, and he broke clays, he had a great time. And you know, that's one of the things that he's going to go out and remember the rest of his life and hopefully pursue as an athlete within the shooting sports. But a lot of the adults that are introducing children into firearms is they just don't have the right equipment. You know, they take them out there. I remember when I was younger, 6 years old, out in the Owyhee Deserts in Idaho. My dad introduced me into the shooting sports with a 22 caliber bolt action and shoots, and it was enough for me to handle. You know, not a lot of recoil, little to none at all, and walked me right through it. Keeping in mind, my father was also an NRA instructor, so he already had the proper background to make sure that I learned properly. So, you know, it really depends on the individual. It depends a lot on their maturity level and, you know, where you're going to go with that.
Absolutely. And I think when you talk about teaching kids, I mean, particularly with shotgun, size of the shotgun is important at that point.
Oh, it is. Yeah. You don't want to put an anti-aircraft gun in their shoulder, you know?
Absolutely not. And even just getting that stock comfortable so they've got the reach and they're not stretching themselves out.
Exactly. And it's, you know, they make a lot of youth models out there. I think Partner makes one that's a 410 that I would say any average sized, you know, 8 to 10 year old can handle under proper instruction. And you know, that's, you know, but I've got a 12 year old daughter that can handle my 12 gauges, you know. So it really depends on who it is, and you need to size that up.
It really does. But what about when we get into domestic partners? You know, someone who shoots a lot and their other half has never expressed an interest or even expresses a bit of a disinterest? Because that's something that comes up on forums a lot for sure.
Oh, it does. It does. Yeah, you see that out there everywhere. That, you know, I'd like to go shooting more, but my wife doesn't like it. Or I'd like to go shooting more, my husband doesn't like it. And we see more and more of that every day as we see this wonderful tide turn of the male-dominated sport becoming more of a co-ed sport.
Absolutely. Which, and that's so good.
Oh, it is. It is. Yeah, I'll tell you what, there's nothing brings a smile to my face than when I see, you know, one of the ladies out there with a, you know, decked out AR-15, you know, plinking targets 100 yards away, you know. And, yeah, she knows more about it than, you know, than the guy she brought with her. You know?
The frustrated awesome. Boyfriend who's blaming the gun.
Oh, yeah. So what do you do? What do you do when you have a disinterested partner? Well, that's when I think at that point it's time for professional instruction.
Or dump them.
Or, yeah, exactly.
Divorce.
So, no, what do you do? You know, I honestly encourage professional instruction, and I encourage professional instruction regardless of the situation, because one of the worst things out there, and we'll put this up with the podcast, the link about the boyfriend instructor. There's actually a photo that we posted up on the Fast OC Facebook page that covers that topic. There are a lot of frustrations that come out during the teaching process, especially amongst domestic partners, including boyfriend, girlfriend, you know, girlfriend, girlfriend, boyfriend, boyfriend, whatever that case may be, that you're attempting to show them. It might not go smooth, but you've got that relationship where you can express frustration. Oh, you're not doing this right. What are you doing? Why are you doing this? Or you might not be doing it right yourself, teaching them how to not do it right, and then get frustrated when it doesn't, you know, when it doesn't work out.
And then on top of that, you've got a training scar as well.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
I think, I mean, we were talking about this earlier very generally, and I explained to you the way I've put it to a couple of people is, well, I mean, it's mainly been guys there who want to teach their girlfriends or their wives or what have you, and it's, would you teach that person to drive? Because nothing will strain a relationship like trying to teach your partner to drive. I mean, God, I wouldn't with my other half. I mean, I send her straight to you for shooting. But, yeah, it's one of those things. And I don't think it's a case of, no, you shouldn't teach someone to shoot. Getting the basics down, particularly safety, I mean, as long as it's being done right.
Yeah, no, we build our courses in a particular format where we discuss, you know, the nomenclature, we discuss, you know, the parts, the pieces, why this works. We build that up into a safe handling practical where they start getting familiar with, you know, put the thing in the thing and do the thing. And, you know, regardless of the, you know, what firearm we're talking about, where you have, you know, this is, you know, always keep a point of safe direction, always keep a finger off trigger, always keep it unloaded, and build that up into a conscious decision for safety, an understanding of what are the differences in between these firearms. Is this single action? Is this double action? What's the differences? What are the safety protocols that affect both? And get them comfortable, because a lot of the people that come into these courses, the one thing that they're scared to death of once an instructor picks up a firearm is, you know, dear Lord, it's going to go off. Well, they don't know yet. But, you know, the only thing they've seen is they've been exposed to media and they've been exposed to television and movies, and anybody that's holding a firearm thing is going to go bang. They don't understand that it's unloaded. They don't understand, you know, what the condition of that firearm is. And we work them up into it. Then we go in, you know, this is how to safely handle it. Now let's talk about what makes it work. Let's talk about ammunition and the differences in ammunition, and let's start talking about marksmanship and bringing that all together. This isn't a program that's slapped together on a range and, you know, and done overnight. This is decades of thought and methodology that goes into this, and it's proven to work. You know, you have the, we'll just call him the boyfriend instructor, and regardless of gender or relationship, that goes into the range and says, okay, here's what I'm going to have you do. I'm going to have you point at that piece of paper, and I'm going to have you hold the gun, and I'm going to have you pull the trigger. You know, and everything from slide bites to crossing thumbs behind the slide or holding onto the cylinder during, you know, shooting a revolver. And you exactly right. You get that training scar, and now they're done. They have checked out. And the frustration level builds. It affects the relationship. And, you know, the partner that you were trying to introduce into the sport who was hesitant before has zero interest in it. And it almost becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy that, you know, you didn't start off small. You didn't start them with the 22. You didn't start them with something, you know, all the different, you know, the comfort levels. You know, you didn't introduce them into an environment that was, you know, comfortable for them. You didn't put them in a position that was comfortable to shoot from. And now you've introduced them into a firearm that's uncomfortable for them to shoot because they don't know how to shoot it yet. They don't know the process. And, you know, and it turns into a failure. And we take somebody that could have been a successful participant in this sport, and we've turned them away from it. And they go out there, and what do they say? Oh, I tried to go shooting. I hated it. I got hurt. You know, it's dangerous. And how does that get translated to everybody else? Shooting is dangerous. The people who shoot are dangerous. And it's just it's a black eye on the sport. And, you know, we advocate proper instruction. And, you know, the boyfriend, you know, the husband, the wife, the girlfriend, oftentimes are not that person to be teaching that student.
Mm. Yeah. And there's a reason we build a little confidence before getting to the range. Rather than just shoving a gun in someone's hand, you know, there's your sight picture, there's your sight alignment, off you go. You know, there's a reason you build up to get to the point where they're gaining confidence. I mean, starting with, you got to start people with fundamentals.
Right. That's exactly right. You need to teach them, you know, barrel frame and action, and you need to teach them the fundamentals.
Hang on, I'm writing that down. Barrel frame.
Action.
Action. Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. You know, and getting those components and literally building it from the ground up into marksmanship, and then go out there and enjoy it as your competency level with that firearm builds. Most of the people that come into our basic classes have not even purchased a firearm yet. Haven't even made that decision yet. They're just exploring the possibilities.
So that brings us in nicely to buying or helping someone purchase their first handgun. I mean, we're going to talk about handguns first because rifle and shotgun, you're into a whole new world. Where does someone start? Starting with that grip. I think starting before that is probably wiser, though. Starting with the application. You know, why do you or that person want a gun? Is it going to be for home defense? Is it going to be for target shooting? You know, is it going to be a carry?
Right. Yeah. No, you need to evaluate what your purchase is going to be about. You know, what do you see you using that handgun for? You know, what's the intent? You know, some people want to go out and target shoot. You know, that's, you know, as you know, we have the CAR PM9, which is a phenomenal concealed carry handgun, but, is extremely unpleasant to shoot for target shooting. It's accurate.
Yeah. I think my hand still hurts. That little thing
just beats you up. And, you know, that's one of the things that you need to evaluate. You know, if you're going to use it for defensive purposes, if you're going to use it for, you know, even as far out to say for hunting, you know, what is it that you're going to use it for? What does it break down to? And get that under control, or at least get an understanding of that and head in that direction for it. So, you know, we also get into, price and budget. There's something.
Yeah, you can spend what you like. I mean, you could go out and buy yourself a nice, fully custom, decked out 1911, and you can drop whatever you like on that. $3,000, yep. $5,000, $10,000.
Yeah, and you
can
go down
grand.
As far as $400 and $500 for an okay 1911. You know, and
Or you could go out and buy yourself a nice high point for something.
Don't do that.
Oh, come on. I think High Point gets a really bad rep. you know, if someone wants a gun and they haven't got much money and they want something to keep on the bedside table, and it has to be a high point, I'd rather it was that than a rubber band.
I don't know. I may take a rubber band. At least a rubber band's going to work, you know.
I've heard some really good things about high point reliability, as long as you, you hold it right.
It is. I'm sure we'll hear from High Point about this. And I'll tell you what, you know, if it comes down to that, I'll put my money where my mouth is. I'll actually go out there and do a full review on one.
Oh, I'm going to buy a High Point. I want to make a holster for a High Point and come shoot in a competition just to see what
happens.
Know
what? We have a shooter during the handgun challenges that actually runs a High Point.
Yeah.
He actually runs. Well, he hasn't finished. He hasn't finished a stage with it yet.
But
he has shot that High Point. he has not actually finished a stage with that gun yet. So I don't know if, you know what, we're talking about getting into, you know, reputation and reliability of manufacturers here, but, you know, so far, not impressed.
I think for the most part, any of the handgun manufacturers, that you know the name of or mm-hmm. are recognizable, you can't really go wrong, can you?
No, you can't. Yeah, you want to stay away from, you know, like the Norincos and some of the other ones. And again, it depends on the intended use of the pistol. If you're going to employ this as your carry gun or as a home defense gun, you really want it to work the first time. You know, that's kind of my requirement when it comes to a defensive use firearm.
Oh, I think that's pretty much everyone's kind of benchmark there. If it doesn't go bang, you might as well have not had it.
It is. I mean, it shouldn't really need to be said, but since we're talking about some questionable manufacturers here, yeah, I think I got to throw that out there. Yeah. But no, you're right. With price and budget, you can. Oh gosh, I had a custom 1911 built for me that was $1,100 out the door, and he had just moved down to a company in Texas from a very well known manufacturer for premium firearms, and he was building these from the ground up, straight off the mill, and I got an offer for $7,200 for that one.
I think he's beautiful.
I turned it down. No, that's my pride and joy. You know, a pound and a half trigger. Come on, doesn't get any better than that. But then you get into availability and price of ammunition, and that's a big one right now.
Definitely over the past year. Maybe a little bit longer now, but
yeah. Well, it is, and it's like, you know, one of the things we always recommend. Oh, you're going to go target shooting. You know, go get a 22 long rifle. You know, go get a chamber for 22 LR. And now it's more of like, well, you should really think about a 9mm because at least I can find 9mm ammunition around here.
Well, even then, I was struggling with 9mm for a while, and all I was finding was the occasional box of 40.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. It's starting to come back, and some of the manufacturers I've talked to, it depends on, I think, on what day you catch them, and, you know, did they get powder in? You know, did they get primers in? You know, oh, the outlook looks great, or... You know, yeah, we're having some issues with powder, and that's kind of the new thing right now is, the availability of actual smokeless powder, and people are starting to sweat that. But, you know, I think sanity will return to the market, and I'd say within the next 6 months, I think we'll start seeing the availability certainly go up.
Yeah. Or as I say on CalGuns, 2 weeks. So someone's got their application down. You go and look at guns, what are you looking for? Hand fit is probably the first place to start.
Yeah, pistol fit and ergonomics, it makes no... I mean, you know, I'm going to say that, and then I turn around and violate it with my carry gun. but it's, I'm going to group in pistol fit and ergonomics into what I look for as far as a carry gun. And, obviously I'd love to carry the CZ-97B, but at 3.5 pounds, it kind of makes it tough to keep your pants up, you know, or to even keep it concealed. I mean, that thing's a hand cannon.
Well, yeah, I mean, you run out of ammunition with that, and you've got an acceptable hammer.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, you could definitely bludgeon them if it got to that point. But, no, I carry that little PM9, and, you know, it's easily concealable. Does it fit my hand? No.
In a word.
It doesn't quite fit my hand properly. I got to keep the extended magazine on it. But, you know, that's in my mind first and foremost. For somebody who has no intention of carrying, who's looking for more of a target shooting gun, obviously, you know, the fit in the palm, and, you know, does it feel right? Does my finger reach the trigger properly? Is it not too heavy? Is it not too barrel heavy? Meaning it, you know, has a tendency to pitch forward. You know, all those little nuances all build up to, you know, to your fit and ergonomics. And ultimately, the only way you're ever going to find that out is try before you buy.
Yeah, go shoot. Range is the range, hire some. You know, what do you like? What do you think you're going to like? And narrow down from there.
Exactly. And you know, you're also going to get an opportunity to see what repeated use of the handgun feels like.
Oh yeah,
you know,
and you're going to get to right feel size. What a shot out Glock feels like.
Yeah,
you can't worry too much about how accurate it is on a range gun, unless that range gun is reasonably new.
No, or they maintain them really well. And I know some of the ranges around here are, you know, they go from not maintaining them at all to, you know, they have a person that's all they do is maintain their range guns. And so you can get a good idea from that. You also get a good idea of your recoil, you know, and that seems to be, you know, something that people are intimidated by. And that goes into our first segment of proper training, you know, again, we'll get into the typical, you know, the boyfriend instructor that, you know, has the alpha male syndrome and draws out the 50 caliber Desert Eagle and wants his girlfriend to shoot it to show, you know, oh, this is what I shoot, and you can, you know, with proper grip, with a proper stance, you know, most recoil on most sane handguns can be managed.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know. Yeah, again, I've got a petite 12-year-old daughter that runs my my 45 ACP, you know, all of them, with no problem, and I've seen full-grown men struggle with it.
Well, when you say with no problem, so, the way to describe that would be with joy.
Oh, with joy. Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh my gosh, you know, most parents are worried about, you know, having to get all the. You know, the toys and the electronics for their kids, and I've got to worry about my ammunition bill with mine. You know, I guess that's a good problem to have. You know,
yeah, there's some moments I'll never forget that we might tell those stories later.
Oh, absolutely.
It is a case of getting out there and trying them. You know, it's. I mean, you get into caliber as well. I mean, people want to sweat caliber
all the time.
I don't get that. I mean, some people like look at my wife, CJ. She's perfectly happy with a 40. She's not a fan of 9. And it's just the way that caliber feels to her when she shoots it. She likes it. Personally, I prefer a 9 as a general rule. But then, you know, you go shoot a different gun, who knows?
That's true, you know, and you're always going to get that the misconceptions or the preconceptions or even the prejudice from one caliber to another.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we talked about some of that on our Gun Myths podcast here a couple episodes back, and it's more that we'll expand on that. You know, with some of the new ammunition technologies today, there's not a lot of difference. No. There really isn't. You know, you're talking about foot pounds and you're starting to get into some of the more technical details, but, you know, that argument's going to remain the same. And somebody sees, you know, like the old adage of, you know, never get into a gunfight with a gun whose caliber doesn't start with 4.
What about 5?
But yeah, you can get that, you know, or like some people ask me, well, why do you carry a 45? because they don't make a 46 yet, you know. Yeah. And come to find out, actually, they do.
Yeah, they do, and they make a 50, which is even bigger.
They do make a 46, yeah. Or at the last gun, not the last handgun challenge, what was it? The couple handgun challenges again, the 460, yeah. You know.
Are we talking about that big black powder thing?
Oh, yeah. Yo, we have one of our shooters bring out his... it's called an Optima Inline. It's a 50 caliber black powder handgun that I'm quite sure actually loosened the bridge in my mouth when I shot it. That thing is something else.
Percussive, I think, is one way to describe that thing. Yeah, definitely not. Yeah, when you see it move baffles
in the ceiling that are plated with steel, I mean that really speaks to the absurdity of that firearm. It really does.
Yeah,
it really does.
He actually used it in the challenge, didn't he?
Yeah, that was, he typically draws that out on his first shot just to, you know, get things started and obscure his vision, so. but yeah, just to rip through it, I mean, you know, one of the other things you want to make sure, is it easy to use,
mm-hmm.
and is it easy to clean?
Yeah. So buy a glove, you know, basically.
Yes. You know, or even like the 92F, you know, the Beretta 92F, it breaks down in... You know, field strips down into the four or five parts. It's easy to wipe down, easy to clean, you know, easy to put back together. Or you can go with, you know, my Walther that breaks down into, you know, about 17 parts, and I've got to watch two different YouTube videos to get the thing to go back together properly, you know.
Oh, that thing.
So, yeah, that's one of the things that you certainly want to look at. You know, and especially, again, getting into that defensive mindset. You don't want to have a bunch of bells and whistles and switches and knobs and levers on your firearm to make it work.
So a Glock clean.
Or you know what? My 226 has, you know, three levers. One makes it go bang, one makes it go click, and the other one sends the slide home. You know, so simplistic operation. And it's not dishwasher safe. You know, because honestly, Tupperware belongs in the kitchen, not on the range.
No, Tupperware's good. It keeps the bullets fresher for longer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I don't know. I just don't want my gun made out of recycled baby bottles. That's all I'm saying.
Are we going to go down this route now?
Oh, yeah, we are. Yeah, we're going to go down that road.
No, we're not.
Also, you want to look at your warranty and your guarantees. You know, and that kind of gets into this argument about new versus used. You know, and again, it always goes back to the intended use. If I'm going to use it for defensive, it's probably going to be a new gun. Mm. And then our joy, you know, one of our market spaces is the availability of your repair or your aftermarket parts. You know, do they make holsters for it? Do they make a new set of sights for it that you may like? Do they have grip panels that you may be looking for? And, you know, are those things out there? You know, like I've got a Tenfoglia that's 41 Action Express that I absolutely cannot find ammunition for, and and most people I talk to have never even heard of the gun. And finding aftermarket parts for it has proven difficult to the point that I just keep it in the safe, and it's like, hey, look at this, I've got this thing that I haven't shot since the day I purchased it. So,
all right, so I think. You know, we've been around the houses a bit, but we've covered a fair bit there. That's a subject we might have to come back to at some point. I mean, I'd like to get Jeremy's take on that as well, with his experience of working in a store, actually selling firearms. So it's good stuff.
Yeah, it is. And like I said, you know, first place to start is, you know, start at the store.
Start at the store. You know? Pick them up.
Start at the store. Yeah, if you're going to go forward and make a purchase... Obviously, in the state of California, you need to go through your handgun safety card, affectionately known as the Communist Party card here in California, and you know, at least get yourself qualified to purchase, and then start picking them up.
Yeah.
Ask questions
and don't be daunted by that handgun safety card. I mean, the questions on there
it's like 20 questions. It's common sense. It really is. If you can't pass it, honestly, you probably should not own one.
Yeah. And if you do pass it, then you've just paid your tax. Well, now that you've ruined it, I'm going to go ahead and read this anyway. We've actually got an email. I mean, an email this week. I'm a little bit disappointed. I'm going to put our emails out there anyway. If you want to get in touch with either of us, just our first name at fastoc.com and it will find us. So I had a gentleman called Craig. Hey guys, listen to your first podcast and enjoying them. I'm hoping you will talk more about ARs. I'm looking to buy my first one, and there's a lot of stuff out there. But I'm curious to know what guns you like to shoot and carry. Keep up the good work, guys. So, yeah, we are actually planning on doing... We were going to do it tonight, but unfortunately that fell through. But we are going to talk about the AR platform, probably at length, I should imagine, very shortly. So, yeah, keep an ear out for that. I think we're going to talk to Jeremy about that because that's his specialist subject, I think. What do we carry? Well,
yeah, I kind of gave that one away, didn't I?
Yeah.
No, I have absolutely fallen in love with that 226.
Have you really? I hadn't noticed.
Yeah, no. I mean, it's one of those ones that it's like the 1911. They got everything right. You know, everything was done. Obviously, it was a collaboration between Sig Sauer and the United States Navy SEALs to get the components, to get the fit, to get the ergonomics, to get the function to what they demanded. And it's a great shooting gun. It really is. I highly recommend it to anybody that can find one. Don't let that fall off your radar. On YouTube, Fast OC TV, and I think it's called the End of the Night video. It's about 16 seconds long. I shot against Lex, who is a ridiculously fast shooter. It sounds like a single gunshot when he shoots every single time. Whether he's shooting trios or he's shooting double taps, he runs that 1911 so fast, it's remarkable. And by the skin of my teeth was I able to best him on the final round. And but if you slow it down to about 25% and watch the barrel of my 226, it just doesn't move. You know, the recoil's mitigated. The barrel sits a little bit lower in it than most of my other sidearms, and I can get a good kind of a thumbs forward grip on it, or some people call it the operator grip. And it runs pretty. It really does. It's easy to get on target. It's easy to manage, and it's awesome. So that's my current pick until the next best one comes out. But I think this one's going to be hard to beat.
Yeah, I think you're going to be with that one a while. I wish I thought to shoot it when we were down there. I should have. Should have tried to grab that. Well, I shouldn't have tried to grab that off you, but I should have tried to persuade you to hand it over for a few minutes and let me shoot it.
Yeah. Well, it's not going away anytime soon.
Sorry?
I said it's not going away anytime soon.
No, I don't doubt that. But and I'm sticking with my M&P. I've got an M&P in a Smith & Wesson M&P in 9mm, and I love that thing. I like it because it's not a Glock. I've got nothing in particular against Glocks, but everybody shoots a Glock, so I know I kind of like that. But that doesn't mean anything. But it's as reliable as hell. It's comfortable. Ergonomics wise, it's great. I just haven't found anything I don't like about it.
Yeah, no. It's the big thing is, the aftermarket accessories, because there's nothing like going out and spending $500 or $600 on a firearm and then finding out that nobody makes anything for it.
Yeah,
holsters. Yeah, down to holsters. You know, other than going out and getting a custom Kydex molded for it. If you're looking for something that's readily accessible, that can be a frustrating point. It really can, and I've experienced that. Obviously, with that Tenfoglia and the CZ, that's just, you know, parts aren't readily available, and even going online and looking for it, it's what you end up is custom this, or hey, I used a part for this, and then I modified it slightly to make it work.
Yeah, I don't want that in my gun.
Yeah, that's not what I want to use. You know, not recommended. Not recommended at all.
Yeah, that's up there with going out and getting the Dremel, isn't it?
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. And that was some of the things. Oh, well, if you Dremel this part out and cut this down to this size, you're like, oh my gosh, come on, people.
I'll tell you what, with the M&P, there's something, something comes up a lot. A lot of people don't like the trigger. And I believe M&P have actually sorted out what people are moaning about. It's a little bit gritty. I mean, on my one when I got it, it was a little bit gritty. But the Apex trigger, I've shot one with the Apex trigger, and it was really nice. I mean, I'll give it that. But the M&P trigger, a 3,000 round trigger job, and I can't see anything wrong with it. I'm not a fan of upgrading a gun. I mean, to my mind, it should do what it does out of the box.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I mean, you see, and well, you know, Sig Sauer does offer a package for some of their guns. I know for the 226 to...
Does it make it even change, more operator?
Yeah, to make it even... Yeah, so you can truly be an operator operating in operations.
Tactical but, beard detachment.
Exactly. Where they have... you know, they change the trigger reset. They polish the slides. They, you know, they polish the triggering mechanism to make it smoother and everything else. And it's like, well, you know, as a carry gun... I don't want that trigger light. You know, I want that wall there.
Yeah. I want to know that when everything's gone wrong and adrenaline's running high, that trigger went when I meant it.
Yeah, I don't
go.
Accidentally send one down range. Obviously, you know, sights on target, finger on trigger, but under stress a lot of weird things happen and to skip one off the concrete in front of you or, you know, make the situation any worse than it already is, you know. If it can be avoided, then avoid it. But no, I know a lot of the guys that the target shooter run competitions with them. They'll get that job done. I've shot one that has had those modifications. It is a world of difference. And no, I absolutely would not carry a gun like that. I like where it is. I'm used to where it's at. I like the pounds that I have on the trigger pull, and that's what I'm comfortable with. So,
what do you use in the way of holster?
Right now I've got for that 226, I have a holster made in Israel, specifically made for the 226. That's a level 3 retention holster. In fact, if you, again, if you watch that video, you can hear all these clicks from between Lex and I as, he's clearing his gun as I'm reholstering mine. And
I saw you trying to cheat and leave those off.
No, they're on. You can watch. You can hear it pop open when I draw it out of the holster.
Because I made you put it back in like that. I wanted Lex to beat you.
Oh, I know. It's so frustrating when, you know. As I always tell everybody, it's not even cool to be cocky anymore, you know.
No. I tell you, I'm going to put a bounty on beating you. That's coming.
Yeah, it's fun sometimes to be the man to beat, but, you know, it paints an awfully large target on your back, so.
Right, on that note, I'm going to wrap us up. You can find us on facebook.com/fastoc. You can email us, just pick a first name, @fastoc. We're obviously on Twitter, Google+. I'm pretty active on there. So, there we go. Thank you very much, Lance, and thank you everyone who listens, all one of you.